Welcome, and you're listening to a Queued Up Media Group production of Geekologist Radio, part of the Ninja Pancake family of podcasts. And meow.
Shut up and sit down.
Hey, it's Christopher, and welcome to Geekologist Radio, where we take you through our queue and into our gaming systems and ride the hype train from the past into the future. Let's introduce our crew for tonight's cast. Up first, we have Derek, Mr. Cajun Saint.
Yes, I'm back from a little vacation. These guys, I listened to last week. They went wild last week. I mean, they had just nobody keeping them in check. So I'm back to keep these gentlemen in check. So
general's back. General's away, the kids will play. Next up, we have Mr. Nash. What's up?
Not much, man. Looking forward to this episode. And yes, we did play, and although one of us is not here tonight.
Play too hard.
Yeah. Wow, so Fouts is not here. So then we start to, can we inlay some things for Fouts? Are we allowed to do that? I mean, Fouts likes to play games when others of us leave. So maybe we can do that when Fouts is not here.
But
I doubt it, since he's the one who edits.
Exactly.
Cut out no matter what anyway.
Fouts, can you put this in so where we make fun of you?
Oh, right. you know he edits, so he could still appear at any point.
Right?
Like he'll find ways to insert Granny at some point. You know that.
Yeah.
Granny's coming. Man, I hate her and her rocker and her canes, but whatever. Yeah. Let's go into errors and omissions.
Yeah, there was one I caught while listening last week, and I was yelling. I was just like, "Dude, antagonist is this, and protagonist is that." No. Antagonist is this, and protagonist is that. So we did flip that last week when we were talking about Far Cry covers.
Yeah, that was definitely me, and that was me with like three beers in. So I apologize to folks. I know what an antagonist and a protagonist is, and I was definitely confused maybe in that segment.
Yeah.
Apparently, I was also confused for one other segment, too. I was pointed out to me that there's a Gary versus Jerry incident. If you are into Game of Thrones, they are the Targaryens and not the Targaryens. So I am pro-Gary, not pro-Jerry. I apologize. If you're like me and also yell out, hey, that person with the yellow or white hair, then we're all on the same page on that.
Now, on the antagonist protagonist front, you did in the like very next segment or one right after get it exactly right when you would use those terms when you were talking about Sony and Spider-Man. I was like, you got it right.
Yeah.
Now. He must have just been drinking and going fast in the previous
one. Seriously, yeah. Like I was, you know, I fly fancy for you when it comes to this. Like we're off the hip. Like honestly, you know, if you want like a little behind the curtains, whatever, we have a listing of things that we're talking about, but it's not like we write everything out. Like we're literally just flying off the handle for most of the stuff. We just have a basic outline. So
I used to write everything out, and then that just sounded very robotic.
It did sound very robotic. So we decided to cut that out.
Then you added the general. He was like, what the f-?
We did add the general, which is why the error and omissions have now occurred, because like we just, honestly, we get really passionate about things. The reason why we have errors and omissions is because sometimes when we're having a conversation in our head, we see it one way, but it comes out a different way. It's not, we're not intentionally trying to mislead anybody when we're trying to have these conversations. It's just, you know, you're passionate in the moment and you truly believe it when you say it. And then you're like, ooh, no, that's not right. Even when you hear yourself back sometimes, it's like, oh, wow, you sound terrible, dude. What were you talking about? And then for me personally, you can hear me progressively get more and more intoxicated to the point where I'm starting to slur at the end. I'm really curing that problem as we speak, as I'm drinking a second beer. So we're gonna move quickly into our queue.
We switched round and round till half past dawn. There was 57 channels and nothing on. 57 channels and nothing on. 57 channels and nothing on.
All right, so for NRQ this week, you might see it quite heavily loaded on the Cajun front.
This is called Cajun hasn't been on in 2 weeks, so now we're going to back up for like two full weeks. He's gearing up on everything he's seen for two full weeks.
Exactly, yeah. Just all of that stuff. You're like, oh, we missed this. Talks about all these things. And it's like, yeah, it's back now.
We were super light in our queue last week. It was super light.
Unreal. I was just like, what the hell? Yeah, what was going on here? Like,
nobody watches
on
anything.
Like, Game On was like, Hype Train was like on point, but like, I was listening in the car on my drive back from vacation, and like, man, NRQ and Game On are just not on point this week. What's going on? And then Hype Train's
right here. Side note, this guy was editing on his way home, too. Like, it wasn't like he was just sitting in a car driving home. He was also editing on his way home, too, in a car, which I thought was really awesome.
Yes, I started on the Taboo Megasode in the car. I asked my wife, like, which leg are you driving? Basically setting the stage of, I'm only driving half. And so she drove the first, and I went in, and I did about a little over 50% of the edit for Taboo Megasode. I just need to put everything together. So it's good.
That's
good
awesome.
Path going. But starting on NRQ, I was going to cover Flash Season 1 because that's completely done. But with Faust not here, he's the only one that watched it with me. So I'll just save that one for when Faust is back. And then one thing we missed is, yes.
It was Season 1? Like Season 1, oh, you guys are catching back up?
Sorry. Yeah, sorry. Season 3.
That's already an
save
Aaron
from
omission.
An Aaron. Oh,
Aaron
saying,
omission
saved
for next week already.
No, because you corrected in episode. Correct in episode is not Aaron omission for next week. But that was a quick catch. So you're paying attention and not playing Mario Run, and I appreciate you.
I was just making faces on it. I was like, wait, Season 1. I'm like, I'm on Season 1.
I was like, maybe I can catch up. Like, I was really thinking that for like a second.
Oh, God, no. Yeah, that's at this point, that's 69 episodes. That's a lot. Better Call Saul, and I'll keep some of these short that don't have a lot of new stuff. Better Call Saul, it's still good. Not a lot of stuff happened. He's just kind of wallowing around trying to deal with how he's going to pay for things and slowly leaning towards Saul. It just had a little more Mike Armentrout storyline in there. And I like kind of where that's going. This might actually lead to... some incapacitation in the near future. We shall see. Got some theories on that leads to the bell ringing. But we didn't get an episode. We didn't get two episodes. I've been going for two, but we only got one. They didn't have one for Memorial Day. Jumping right over that into Fargo. Fargo, they set their stage for the main villain to go down. Every season of Fargo, every movie of Fargo, main villain has to go down in a certain... inopportune way that you probably didn't see coming, but it's something that's more of a they fall from grace instead of actually being caught. And this one, I didn't expect it to be this way. It's more like him being in the wrong place at the wrong time, cleaning up someone else's mess. And I like it. I like when it's not somebody. There aren't super detectives, and there's no super detective taking us down. It's just like, I'm going to think about doing this. And the detective just happens to appear. So I think that's where we're heading right now.
Where are we at as far as quality is concerned? Season 1 and Season 2, you were just over the moon for. So like, where are we at on Season 3? Like, is it the same quality or same level of excitement? Or is it kind of like, oh, this might not be the first two?
So Ewan McGregor as the brothers is absolutely fantastic in both his roles. The whole cast... I find in this one really good. The villain in this one, I really like Vargas, but Billy Bob Thornton's villain was absolutely fantastic Season 1. His was probably the best, but still, when you're comparing it to something that was award-winning role, when you take a step down, you're going from a 10 to a 9.5 almost. So it's still really good stuff. Jumping right back into a description of Fargo and the comparisons of previous seasons is that comparative villains. I mean, Billy Bob Thornton was award-winning. Taking a step down is still really strong. The main cast is great across the board, and you watch this for the acting and the dialogue. It's just entertaining. The little plot twists here and there, entertaining. It to me, it sits right along with the best of them. As being a bigger name ensemble cast, it doesn't sit with some of the others because not as many of the names and faces are recognizable. But in terms of the quality of the performance, it's right up there with all of them. But not having the ensemble cast might not get the buzz that the show might be looking for to continue its high ratings and continue to go. So we shall see how it lands otherwise. But for me, it's perfectly enjoyable. We'll continue to watch this show and as long as I keep putting it up. Now, I've been kind of doing like a little secret sneak on the side with Preacher. So I've been, as we've been recording some of these, I've been gradually watching Preacher over the last couple of weeks. And it's like, I'll just cover it when it's finally done. And man, I went to give this show a try so I could watch. It's something I could watch without my wife, because most of the other shows we talked about, these are shows that my wife wants to watch too. So I have to wait for her and then we watch it. And unless we're recording and I'll make a note like, hey, I had to watch that show without you because we're recording. This one is something she's just not into whatsoever. So that was free reign of whenever she was doing stuff, I could go watch this one. And I can see why some critics didn't like it, but this show hit exactly where I wanted to. I enjoyed it. Seth Rogen, Evan Goldberg did a great job. Their sense of humor was evident throughout. And I can't wait for the road trip in season two.
How did you like the vampire character?
Oh, I love that character. Love that character. One part about the road trip in season two is they made an effort. Like, this is a vampire who is affected by sunlight. So he has that vulnerability. Like, he doesn't have all the vulnerabilities vampire has, but he does have affected by sunlight. And how they do a road trip in a car that has no window tint. That's why I think they're just going to ignore the fact that he's a vampire in the car the whole time. But I really think they need to come, they need to make some effort to address that in some humorous way. Because how are you going to do a road trip with a vampire in the backseat of your car when you have all these big windows and no window tinting on that car, obviously? So, but that's me nitpicking.
Throw a big blanket over him. Throw a big blanket over him.
Having wear his big hat. I loved how the fact that the preacher didn't know he was a vampire like forever. He told him a couple of times. He couldn't go out in the sun. He was wearing all this stuff. And like, preacher had no clue until it was like made completely obvious. And like how so many other people were clueless. And I love that play on it. I love the angels or whatever. I think they were, the angels in the cowboy hats. Yeah, those characters were great. It's so original, so original. You couldn't see anything like this anywhere else on television because their mixture of humor, a little bit of gore, and the supernatural. And this and the supernatural with like religion too, and how those two were coinciding. And not really, I mean, yeah, you can obviously piss some people off, but not like making grand statements that like, oh, I can't watch this because this show is this. It's like, man, this show is not pro-God, pro-devil, pro-vibe. It's just telling you a story in this weird world that this show is based in. And the one thing that I didn't think was going to pay off and I thought was going to be a big misstep was the ended up being flash outs, not even flashbacks of forest, flash outs to the cowboy scene, and didn't realize he was replaying that incident. And so I thought that was going to be completely missed. I'm like, why is it that? Why is this there? You're just filler. But how it played out in the end and how it's leading to more stuff, I really like that, and I'm really glad that paid off because I really thought that they were going to misstep with the cowboy scene.
Yeah, like it's just another thing that came out that just shows that AMC is kind of knocking it out of the ballpark with different shows, not just with The Walking Dead. I mean, this just went right along the lines, right with Into the Badlands, which if you haven't caught that, Cajun,
I did.
If you like this, if you got the
it wasn't for me. It didn't have enough story. The first couple of episodes I saw of Into the Badlands didn't have enough story to engage me with it, and I liked the fight scenes, but it didn't have enough story for me. And so maybe it picked up later with a more in-depth story. But if you're just gonna do a fight porn show, then there's other action stuff I could watch that can tell me with more story. I do want story in my action game, in my action show. Sorry.
Yeah, Preacher definitely has a good storyline to go along with it. I mean, they did a good use of the source material from the comics, and that was one of the things I liked about it, is that, you know, that the showrunners, they knew the comics, they knew how they wanted to display the characters, and they did a good job directing that, and that's something that I felt was was just, I felt it was extremely well done, and it's one of the things that kept me coming back to the show.
Yeah. For me, I'm going with probably like 7.5 out of 10 for this season. I liked it a lot. I think there's things that could have made it better, but it was thoroughly enjoyable, and I'm glad I caught up before season two. And so I'm ready to roll on that one. It'll be something I follow for sure when that one comes along. But you're speaking of binging stuff before getting into something else, so you have quite a binge there, Damien.
Yeah, so I went through and I binged episode part 1 through 8 of the Friday the 13th series of films, minus part 5. But
I'm literally clapping. There's no way I can.
Oh,
do
see,
that.
See, I love Jason. Yeah, but yeah. See, I love Jason movies. Interesting thing is that a lot of people don't. I wanted to throw some stuff in here, some trivia, because it's kind of the thing I've been doing lately with some of the things that I watch. Trivia was the fact that part 5, and one of the reasons why part 5 is not on Encore right now, is because in a lot of the fan base, it is not, even though it is part of the Tommy Tommy trilogy of the films. It's not, it wasn't considered Jason, because in the first Friday the 13th film, it winds up being his mother that's the killer. And
spoiler
then
alert.
They brought in, spoiler, shit. And then in part two, they bring in the fact that it's Hillbilly Jason, he survived, and then it goes to the hockey mask in part 3. Part 3 is one of my favorites.
When's Chad come in? Where's Chad?
Chad's, the characters are based off of the characters in the game that we're jumping ahead are actually based off of counselors from the film.
I was just going off the trophy that Chad's a dick. That's my favorite trophy. That's awesome.
Now, within the films and stuff like that, the reason why 5 is excluded was because in 5, they tried to revert back and they were like, okay, Jason's dead. We're not going to, you know, we're not going to go back and visit him. In 5, they're like, okay, we're going to have Tommy be in a like halfway house / psych house. A guy gets killed, and then they wind up, that guy's father goes crazy, decides to dress up as Jason to try to get away with murdering the kids, that, you know, it goes back into that thing. And what it,
oh, fake
and
Jason.
So what the whole goal, what the goal was of that was that they would just have new killers take on the role of Jason as copycats, kind of like basically, you know, in the first one it was the mother. They wanted to do that, but fans absolutely threw a shit fit over this, and so they actually were like, okay, well now we got to find a way to bring Jason back to life. Hence,
those 5 people were really loud.
Jeez, knock it off. So part 6, Tommy comes back and he decides he has to dig up the grave site and everything, and they typical like just 80s style fashion, he takes a piece of a metal fence post and stabs it into Jason. Jason gets shocked and now Jason's back to life like Frankenstein.
Oh my god.
But I mean, the whole thing is that this is where Jason started to become a supernatural thing. It's been changed over time. You had freaking Jason in space, which started out as they were trying to take themselves serious, and halfway through production, they're like, you know, let's just make fun of ourselves, and it became kind of a spoof.
This is the part where it's not ridiculous.
When you say Jason in space. I replay the Flight of the Conchords song, Bowie in Space. It's Bowie in Space. I play that in my head, but with Jason instead of Bowie. So there you go.
But that's funny. The thing is that it's crazy watching these. You go back and watch these movies like Friday the 13th or the Halloween films or the Nightmare on Elm Street films, and seeing the actors that got their start in it. I'm getting confused. I think it's part 6 has Crispin Glover in it, who's also right now, he's, you know, he's still going strong. He's became a character actor after a lot of the stuff that he did, but he's in American Gods right now.
Johnny Depp getting killed in Freddy Krueger. How's this for a wet dream? And then pulls him down. Oh, come on now.
Oh yeah.
That's a sweet. Okay. That's a great line. That's a great line.
Lawrence Fishburne is in Nightmare on Elm Street films. Yeah.
Seriously?
Yeah. He was an orderly or a doctor. I can't remember. I know he's in Scrubs. I can't remember.
That's
awesome.
I will
go back through and play and do those. But anyway, reason.
When I go back and watch these, though, they look terrible. Like,
they're
bad. They're really bad. Like, it's almost like it's us in the 80s watching really crap horror films. Now in the 2000s watching really crap 80s films. Like,
it is bad. It really is. But, like, I was watching it, and it's funny because my son's now the age that I started watching these films. And so he comes out, and he's talking to me. He's getting the whole mythos, the whole story behind that. And he's like, he's literally taking notes. And so then now he's now binging them. And he comes out to me, he's just telling me, he goes, man, he goes, these are really bad. How did you guys like these? I go, because in the day they were scary.
Because Get Out is because of Freddy Krueger and because of Jason and because of those horror films. That's how you get the, like, what you're watching now. Like, that's how
you
get that.
But it's been pretty cool. Now, the reason why I've been watching these is because a game came out, and I'll be talking about that a little bit later. But like I said, going through, it's definitely worthwhile to watch it. I'd have to say probably my favorite film in the series of the ones not counting The Space, not counting Freddy versus Jason, and not counting the 2009 remake, which I really, really actually enjoyed. I would have to say it's actually part 8, which is Friday the 13th, Jason Takes Manhattan.
Oh my God.
It takes place on a cruise ship, and then it goes into New York, and it was actually entertaining.
dude, you have to have a Lost in New York scene, because they already did Ernest Goes to Camp. Jason's always, there's always something in the campground, so now you have to do the Lost in the City or Takes Manhattan.
The special effects wise, I loved any of the ones with Tom Savini. Any of the ones that he did, like he did part 3 and he did part, I'd have to look up.
Damn, dude, are you like name dropping the special effects artists on these movies?
I am actually. Yeah. No, I follow, like, I do my homework on these films. Like, I love horror films, and I follow. Speaking of, what I'm gonna roll into next is it's not a TV series. It's a podcast that my family and I listen to, and it's called the No Sleep Podcast. They're actually on season 9 right now. It is an audio drama, and I just wanted to read off a little bit. Interesting thing is that if you've seen The Purge Election Year, the first character that's in there that's sitting down, that's like one of the things you hear, a creepy voice, that is the showrunner, David Cummings' voice. And actually, The Purge Election Year sponsored season 8 of the No Sleep Podcast. Basically, what it started from was in spring of 2010, a new forum appeared on Reddit.com. It was called the No Sleep, and the concept was for this forum or / subreddit was to be a place for people to post original scary stories about frightening experiences. It was an online version of telling spooky stories around the campfire. A year later, the No Sleep Podcast was created by, and it was produced by showrunner David Cummings. David Cummings actually is a musician that started transferring over into like being basically doing audio dramas and stuff. And he's got a really, like, once you hear his voice, you can't unhear it. It's just a very haunting voice. Almost like a trying to think, I can't compare him to anybody. It's just, you've heard it, once you hear his voice, you know that's who he is. And he's got a full cast, like the episodes have full ambient sound, they have full casts, so sometimes it might be a monologue, but a lot of times they have other voice actors doing the show along with it. And these are all like original pieces. So you like you anybody that follows can join the subreddit, can write a story, and if it gets upvoted, that story has a high chance of appearing on the No Sleep podcast and be voice acted by the people on there. And some of the people that have written stories on here after the fact of it being voice acted have had those stories published in horror anthologies. So it's a really cool podcast. They do a tour now that they're starting to do each year. They're going to do, they will tour around. You can go see it live acted out on stage. And each episode ranges from like an hour to sometimes up to 2 hours, depending on the episode. And sometimes it's a full single story or it's a series of stories.
That reminds us of our episodes, an hour to like 2 hours, just depends on a particular episode. Yeah. So.
It's a good time frame,
especially when you're going on a road trip. These audio dramas, mm-hmm. great for binging. You like I download them anytime I have to drive to Oregon. That's like I know that's like a 2 to 3 hour drive. I'm like I'll just listen to a couple of these and I'm good.
Yep, 2 hours. That's about the time you're gonna be stopping for a little pit stop anyway. And set up the next one. But did any of y'all catch the Netflix A-list starred movie War Machine?
Not yet. It's in my queue.
Okay.
With Brad Pitt? So, no.
No spoilers. I'll just give a general review. I actually watched this with my family when we were on vacation. I was like, what can we watch? And you watch something that everybody can like of all fronts. So threw that on. And Brad Pitt was amazing. He enveloped the character. Halfway through the movie, my mom leans over and asks me, who's that lead actor? I'm like, that's Brad Pitt. She's like, wow. Like, she had no clue. Like, he enveloped the character so much, she didn't even recognize that it was Brad Pitt. And I liked how the movie leaned on Stanley McChrystal's story as a reference, but didn't, like, overtly, like, trash him or anything like that. Because you can tell, like, there's very heavy elements of the real-life story of General Stanley McChrystal in there. But they didn't use his name because they wanted to tell their own story, make up stuff about this character and not have it be, oh, this isn't part of his real life. No, we want to tell something interesting about a general having an issue, his own issues, trying to lead an unwinnable war. And that's sort of the backdrop. The backdrop of this movie, it set up right from the start, is the war we're fighting is an unwinnable war, and how generals and commanders and politicians and so many other people are trying to win it, are trying to win something that is unwinnable. And really good satire. I was gonna ask a question at this in the end, but I really wonder if they're gonna have a War Machine 2, because after McChrystal was gone, David Petraeus took his place. So this would be really good if they could, each general that took over the Afghanistan war, they do a movie based off of a fictional character of a similar name. Instead of David Petraeus, Bob Petronas, we'll call it, if they go to the next one, and then just move on to the next general and show his rise and fall, but do it in a satirical way. Because you got to be able to make fun of this character and make some extreme personality traits and decisions, which is exactly what they did with this. And they made very extreme character traits to make it an entertaining movie and enjoyable. I'm going to go 8 out of 10 for me on it. I enjoyed it. If it was playing in the background, if it was on regular TV playing in the background, definitely something you just turn your head and just watch a bit, because it was entertaining to watch.
Nice.
That's interesting. Like, I just looked at Rotten Tomatoes and IMDb, and it's got like 54 mm-hmm. and a 62. What were some of the drawing points? Was the storyline, or was it Brad Pitt, or was it a combination of the two?
The acting in Brad Pitt really kind of, him especially, carried it. Some of the subcast wasn't nearly as strong, so I could see that as being a negative. The fact that it has a lot of political under and overtones to it, and they don't take a side. They allow their characters in the show to make fun of both sides, and like don't paint one side. So it's not like if you're a liberal, it's like, yes, it's going to be everything 11. And if you're a conservative, yes, it has everything 11. It doesn't pick a side. So I could see if somebody's watching it, hoping that it's going to make fun of one thing or the other. It's going to be disappointing if you sit on hard on either side of the political line. This movie is going to say or do something that's going to piss you off. And so I can see people just turning it off at that point because they're expecting something else. You have to watch it just like it's going to, these people are going to interact the way they want to. It's not going to just feed your confirmation bias and make you feel warm and fuzzy inside about your beliefs.
Makes sense. Like, again, people immediately with the Rotten Tomatoes and with IMDb, I don't really trust only based on the fact that it's immediate reaction and it doesn't have the ripple effect. And even if it does have the ripple effect, it takes a while for that to catch up to what the general public thinks. So I appreciate that. And the fact that you had said that War Machine was something that worth watching, it's definitely something that I think I'll take a look.
Exactly. It's not for everyone, but just got to stay that line right in the middle. And it spoke to me, so I liked it. But yeah, I can definitely see things people wouldn't like about it, but it had the stuff I liked in it. And that was Brad Pitt developing a role. Now, moving on to Game On. All right, so the guy that's dancing on my screen right now, Mr. Chris Two Wolves, is a big indie game fan. And when I was sitting there after I finished all the Witcher stuff, like, what should I do next? What should I do? And so I looked in my gaming backlog and I found this indie game, Numa Breath of Life. And I was like, let me give that one a shot. He's in the game. This might not last that long. And played through it. This is a... Numa's a game from 2015. Best comparison is Portal 1 Lite. Like, if you had Portal 1 and it was like a light version, because you got the smart arse British-ist accent narrating. Damien?
I was just curious. I thought that Numa was a little bit more like kind of like Myst.
Never played Myst, so I couldn't compare it to Myst.
Okay.
Now, it's a puzzle solver from a first-person perspective, so that's a check on Portal right there. And then the interface mechanics were very dumbed down. Portal had advanced interface mechanics because you were basically playing the game with portals. This was just you walk, you jump, you look at things, and you have one button for interaction with a few things, which is mainly just pressing. If there's a button, you can go, and then it says press X to press it. But everything else you're interacting with is just walking, doing a very small jump, and looking at things. Looking at things is basically how you control everything. So that simple interaction was how they made this game. It was still creative how they made a puzzle game out of those simple mechanics and made something to last as long as it did. But it could be, this game could be completed in one sit down. This could easily be completed under an hour in a speed run. It took me about two because I had never played it before and there was no speed run there, but it's definitely a one sit down kind of game.
So it's a walking
sit. Oh yeah. Walking and looking. It's a lot of looking at things, because the looking at stuff was something that it doesn't really tell you right away. But it's great because it's narrated by you. Basically, the smart-ass British perspective narrator is your character narrating his experience through the game and slowly realizing what's going on. So it's just one big meta story on what it is to be a gamer controlling a game character. That's kind of what this whole meta story is.
So it knows itself. It knows it's doing it while it's doing it.
At some point, yes. Because at first, well, something right away on the game, this isn't a spoiler, but right away, your character thinks he's a god. Because he just awakens and this world is around him and he has so all of this control over the world. So he thinks himself as a god. And I like the humor in it. But yeah, very dumbed down version of Portal, one sitting. The puzzles I found to be unique. There were some I had to look up because it's such a simple mechanic. I'm like, where do I go? What do I do here? There's about two or three that I didn't get. But normally the narrator in his describing of the environment will figure that out and kind of tell you something that's going on. If you think back of what he said and like, okay, he probably gave me a hint that I can do something there.
So this game leads you a little bit.
A little bit. Like in some scenarios, like, okay, he talked about this. So maybe if I touch this thing and then, but because there's no button interaction, sometimes you had to only do it by standing on this side or the thing you had to look at was here. So you really had to play around. Like one of the things, don't forget to look up and down, because I was walking all around one room, couldn't find anything. And the thing I had to look at was on the ceiling to make it move and do stuff. And so it because it's so simple, you're kind of kicking yourself for not figuring out some of these puzzles. But they did some creative stuff on how to actually interact with them. And a couple of the puzzles were so creative that I didn't realize I was actually interacting with a puzzle. I just thought I was stuck in a room. And then when I read the guide...
That's fantastic, because you don't know you're even in the game, but you're in the game.
Yeah, there was one puzzle that I was... Like, there was a door at the end of a hallway, and I was trying to get to the door. And this is... It's a minor spoiler, but the fact is, like, I think everybody would get stuck on this. So I'm in this hallway, and the thing is, I didn't realize, but every time you looked at a floor tile, the floor tile changed color. So the goal was this one section of floor tiles, you needed to get them all from black to white. And so you had to, like, just control your character's head and just move it at different ways and, like, look, don't look, look, don't look, set, reset, it looked wrong, and change every tile in this one giant rectangle to white, and then a door would open. I would have never caught that without looking at a guide, because every time I was walking into the room, I wasn't noticing that these tiles were changing. I just thought it was a room with tiles on the floor. And so that was pretty cool. And the narrator didn't catch that. So it wasn't fully narrated. Like a lot of these he doesn't talk about because he didn't notice either. And for sure, like that one, I thoroughly didn't notice at all. So I liked some of those puzzles. Yeah.
So you and I beat a game by Playdead that a year ago people were laughing at me at. And they were like, Inside? I've never heard of that. Is that like... a reference to, and they threw out like 10 different references. You've played Inside, and tell me a little bit about your experience.
Yes, Inside. So right after I finished that, right after I finished Numa, like, I need to find another indie game. What's a good indie game? I was like, okay, Chris's number one game last year was Inside. He's an indie game fan. Let me jump on that one. So I went, played that one, and it instantly was like, whoa, like rubbed right off on me. It's a fun game. Again, this game, just like Numa, can be completed in one sitting. So like a speed run, maybe under 2 hours. The puzzles were fun, but the story was told through the background scenery. So it's some of the twists in the story were amazing. Like stuff I was never expecting, because it looks and plays so simple for so long. Then it makes some huge story jumps and twists. I was like, whoa, was not expecting that. And because sometimes I felt like it was a mistake on my part to do something and I fall through here. And I was like, no, it was actually, that's part of the story. Your character needs to do that. And then you're on this whole different section. And like how it ended, that probably the I'm not going to spoil the ending, but how the actual end was like, that was it. It didn't have a big bombastic ending. But I don't think in that game it was necessary. But I was expecting something big and bombastic. But that doesn't mean that it was necessary for it to tell the good story the way it did.
No, the way Playdead plays their games, it's point A to point B might be 2 feet as opposed to everybody trying to jump 10 feet. Mm-hmm. And so you're just going from point A to point B, and it's really simplistic in what it tries to get across. But in the storytelling, it's very emotional. Mm-hmm.
Big time.
And it gives you a lot of visual storytelling. There's not a single voice in the entire game. So everything is to your imagination and to that storytelling. And so people were complaining, wow, this game took forever. It took 4 or 5 years in order to come out. Well, it did, because the visual storytelling has to tell the story and it has to lead the game. And so be able to tell a game that doesn't involve speaking at any point. And every time you make a decision, you can, and this isn't a spoiler, any scene where the dogs are chasing you and you're having to run, like, you really feel like they're on your heels every single time. And it's a matter of a this or a that in order to make sure either this happens or that happens.
Right.
Inside storytelling, when you leave the game, it allows for, okay, I get where the story's going. And then it also opens up to, okay, so what does that mean? And so anytime a story can give me the sensation of I get where the story is, and then I have my own thought of what it means, opens up to conversation with a bunch of other people. And so that's why I appreciated what they did. They take a little bit longer with what they do, but in the end, their storytelling says so much more than half of the other indie games that are out there. So again, I appreciated it inside. I thought it was one of my top games of the year. I'll stand by that, bar none. It was just that it was a really amazing game. The color scheme was very specific. It was a very dark or red, like it was like one or the other. It played with colors, it played with story, it played with nonverbal and verbal, or you know what I mean? Because the nonverbal spoke to all of the verbal in this game. I was just a big fan of Playdead's game, and if you have an opportunity to play the game, like to Cajun's point, like you said, Derek, it's not a very long game. But it takes you on a roller coaster emotionally, where you can where you get enough of a story within a 3 to 4 hour experience. Yep.
And the puzzles weren't next to impossible like Numa's were. The mechanics were simple. If you needed to go from point A to point B, you could normally see what you needed to do. It's just a matter of actually executing sometimes, and so that the execution took some. Trial and error and figuring out, not as much of what do I do here? Like, I know this game on Inside, I know I need to go here, or I need to lift this, or I need to do that. Now I just need to figure out what to do it, instead of being just completely lost like I was in Numa. But I liked how in a game like this with the simple mechanics, how those simple mechanics evolve and interact. Like the first time you put you jump into the headpiece, like, wait, what's going on back there? And you can see how, like, you interact with the background when you all of a sudden that's a new interaction. And so how it takes simple mechanics and a simple thing and evolves it, but also how they hide stuff. I think I only found 3 or 4 of those hidden, the things that have, like, you follow the yellow extension cord. I think I only found 3, maybe 4 the whole game. And there was...
They're extremely difficult.
I don't know how many there were, but I could barely find any of them. So that was real good in a simple game. I got hiding stuff so well.
Side note, in that game, there's an early part where there's a switch that can end the game within the first 20 minutes of the game.
Oh, wow.
You flip a switch, you are able to loop back to it, and it totally ends the game within that 20 minute.
Awesome. Yeah, I'll definitely want to find a video and just do that just to see what that part of the story is, or just watch the YouTube video of somebody doing it and figure out what it is, because I definitely felt like this game could have multiple endings, but I never went back and played, because like sometimes I was trying to go one way and the game pushed me another way. I was like, what if I actually would have made that jump or would have done this right? Could I have continued, or was I always going to slip and fall and go and continue on this other path? So I'm curious if there's alternate endings. All right, passing on to Mr. Damien.
Well, speaking of simplistic gameplay that's actually, you know, will keep you playing, Speedrunners just released for Xbox Live. It's now Xbox Live Gold. Free game you can get. I highly recommend it. It's just a lot of addictive fun. You know, you got these runners like Mario Run, all that stuff. Speedrunners, it has a campaign, but the campaign is just a glorified tutorial, basically saying, hey, play me. You'll unlock different weapons and unlock different characters to play. Ultimately, just leading you to playing it as an online game racing against other people. And if you want to think about, like, these running games, and then add in elements of, like, say, Mario Kart, that's exactly what Speedrunners is. You pick up different power-ups, things like that. You can knock someone back. It's 4 players, and it is addictive, just plain fun. Like, there's not a lot of depth to it at all, but it's just quick, fast-paced. I want to play a couple rounds, and I want to laugh. Fun.
Nice. Now, you hinted at something earlier. You hinted at, like, I watched all these movies. I binged watched all these movies for a reason.
Yes.
What was that reason?
I did. I've been reviewing Friday the 13th, the game, and now it's, I'm going to be doing a side episode that's going to go really in depth with that, hence why I watched all the movies. First off, just saying, the studio themselves, one of the most transparent studios out there. Yeah, they launched a game, they've had some problems, but the thing about the game is, despite its glitchiness, despite its problems, the game is addictive and fun. Like, I absolutely love this game. I haven't played a game that I have won in fear, screamed at in a while. I'm, you know, basically since Alien Isolation. And two, laughed my ass off at. Shout out to Xbox on the Xbox side of things for the Xbox clubs, because where the quick match is not working, it's taken me like a minute to find a match because of the Xbox Live Club system and how well it is working for this title. Now, is that what it's supposed to do for the game? No. Again, it's one of those annoying factors, but still, I'm having a blast. The game is great, but I'd say by the time this episode comes out, our quick matches should be resolved and everything. They have the patch. They're just working on getting it through through Microsoft's tests. Once that's approved, we'll have our quick match and stuff like that, and we'll be able to really dig into it. There will be a written and full review episode, though, coming out just shortly, probably either alongside this episode or more, where I'll go into really super, super deep depth with this thing, because the amount of care that went into programming this game and the animations alone is utterly insane. It is a true gift to the fans.
It was this game released too early?
I feel the game could have used a beta test. This is a thing where a game could have used, you know, give it a beta weekend. Mm-hmm. Say, hey, we just want to test this game out. We're a small studio. Let's beta test it and see where it goes. That would have done so much for them. But even still,
yeah,
they're gonna get there.
Or even do an NDA alpha test if you're scared that you're gonna get a bunch of negative reviews from a beta if you're feeling it's glitchy, because we've known games in the past who release a beta test that have tons of issues, and the final product's significantly better, but the beta went so terribly wrong that people are never going to go to it again. So balance your fears, but get it into people's hands that can test some of your things for you.
Yeah. I mean, there are huge names out there that are basically, it's the same thing. It's they say that the game is glitchy, it's frustrating, and they utterly love it. Well, I'm in that same boat. Like it is an adult version of Hide and Go Seek, and it's a blast. That's the short of it. Like I said, a lot more stuff to talk about, and I'll do that in depth a little later on.
Yeah. One last thing. Does the game give you incentive to upgrade?
To upgrade
Jason's kills.
Yes. Yes, it gives you a lot of incentive to upgrade Jason's kills because of the simple fact that every single iconic Jason kill is in this game. And that is one of the reasons why I watched the films, and I watched the films and did a side-by-side comparison at every kill by watching streamers and their videos and everything else. And that I will go more depth again with that in the full review. But yes, it does give you a lot of reason to play, get points with Jason, and upgrade your kills.
Is this game only for people who have watched Friday the 13th?
No. It's for anybody who wants to go through and play a game that is, if they're a fan of horror genre games, this is a game for you. If you like a game where basically, like, if you like a game kind of like some of the Alien games, you've liked Alien Isolation, this is a multiplayer version of that for you. This would be like the Jason is the alien, and you're just trying to do the survival thing, because in Alien Isolation, you got weapons, but guess what? You could not kill the alien. Now Jason is actually killable, but that is a very difficult task.
Nice.
I watched Chad do it twice.
Chad's a dick.
Now, when Damien was saying earlier about full reveal, he'll be releasing a separate full review for this game that you can find. So that's why he's keeping it short now, because he got a chance to review this game. So good on that. And can't wait to hear that full review myself. Now, this is more moving forward and something I started. But for me, I'm finally playing an old backlog game for me. I'm playing Deus Ex Human Revolution. And getting into that one, if I like that one enough, I'll play the Mankind. The new one that had Mankind in the title. If I forget the actual name of that one, I'm blanking right now off the top of my head. But so far,
is it Mankind Evolved?
Mankind Evolved. That was it. Yes. The cover mechanics on this one are kind of yankee. Like, you really need to do some special thumb maneuvering. Like, you should just be able to pop out of cover with a button instead of having to do the same thing to aim and get out of cover with the same stick. So it makes it for a little bit of a yankee cover mechanic. But it has good difficulty so far. I like the concept of the game and the sort of story behind it so far. And so I'm getting into it, and that's what I'll be playing through right now. And you hear me talk about a little more as I get through it.
Basically, if you like The Witcher, I'm just from experience. If you like The Witcher, Derek, you're gonna find little story elements. You're gonna find side quests. You're gonna find a lot of stuff that you can do in these games. Deus Ex games are very driven by little side things you find that lead to other things. This is definitely a Cajun game. Like knowing how you played The Witcher and how you talked about that. The fact that I instantly see this on here, and I think, yeah, that's Cajun.
Okay, so I'll have to keep going. Right now, I'm going to keep going through it. I haven't enjoyed it, but I'm fresh in. So I haven't done much into it. I think I've only unlocked like 2 XP nodes. Like, no, 2 XP points. Not even 2 XP nodes, 2 XP points. That's how fresh I am. So definitely, way too early to develop a full opinion on it. So I'm gonna give it a lot longer, because how much this game's loved by other people, I definitely want to let it expand and grow on me.
Yeah, once you get some of those abilities and stuff like that, the whole game changes.
Yeah, exactly. I need a healing ability, because I was losing health way too fast. All right, are we ready to get into the hype train?
Whoop whoop.
So we're gonna hop into the hype train, and we're gonna beware of the false rumors.
Yeah, so we're gonna get into E3 talk right now, talk about our predictions, stuff we're hyped about for the upcoming E3. But one thing we wanna beware our listeners about is beware of articles all over the internet and the Twitter, everywhere coming out, that are gonna be false rumors. That a rumor hits, people wanna get the article out as fast as they can on it. They start posting about it, writing about it, speculating about it, but it was based off a false rumor that somebody started. So beware of those.
Sure. And when we were talking about this, we're going to preface, like, I'll express, this is something that's a rumor. This is something that's fact. So something that is a rumor, but extremely, extremely factual. Last E3 press conference that led to people to believe that this was the case, it was on the map when they had the conversation, Wolfenstein. And so if you played Wolfenstein, the new updated version, people just went bananas for this game, loved the DLC, loved the fact that the game was first person and really, really fast and really, really quick. Wolfenstein, I would guess, at this point, has now had a 2-year hiatus, would be at E3.
I think that'd be a good guess.
Yeah, I'd say that.
Also, Bethesda has, when they promoted their E3 press conference, had a Bethesda Circus with two unannounced titles. Under the assumption that the unannounced titles, one would be being Wolfenstein, because they had mentioned it previously, the other is kind of up in the air. So thought processes could be Elder Scrolls 6, they've denied, Fallout VR, which we've seen tech demo of Fallout VR for Fallout 4. My guess is also something that's thrown out in the wind, Evil Within 2, which people have been begging for. It's obviously the sequel to Evil Within. It had a cult following more than anything else. And for Bethesda, a lot of their games, including Fallout, are cult followings. It's so weird, because Bethesda is this really big studio that everybody like praises for all these mega games. But the thing is Bethesda's following is very cultish. It's very, like, the Fallout and the Elder Scrolls and the Evil Within is a very select group of people that are interested in these games. It's a subdivision of a gaming culture. And so it seems like it's a lot bigger than it really is, but it definitely is larger than some other individualistic studios. I mean, outside of Rockstar, I don't know of any other studio that would be probably in comparison to Bethesda, but those two alone could basically hold their own conference and people would be interested in the games that they're producing.
Yeah, the people who love the games Bethesda makes are rabid about them. When the game's announced, it's pre-order city. But if somebody is not interested in that game, it's just, I heard that that's good and I'm glad you like it over there. So it doesn't get a lot of the, at least I've seen, doesn't get a lot of the vitriol from people who don't like or play some of their titles. And it's like, good on you. And the fans that love them, go get them and enjoy the hell out of those games.
And remember, for these individual studios that are having these conferences like Bethesda, Fallout 4 VR is a huge deal. They talked about Quake Champions last year. And so getting it into a sport is going to be a big deal. They're going to re-up that again this year. You would assume that a DLC for Dishonored 2 is in the works at some point. And so for Bethesda, I don't know how many more things besides an individualistic IP that nobody knows about currently would be on their docket, but that's not out of the question either. So they typically run their conference the last 2 years individualistically from other large major parties like Microsoft and Sony. This year they were going to originally run it at 6:30. They bumped that till 9 o'clock. So if you're paying attention, it's on Sunday night, and it's on the 12th, and you want to kind of... When I watched last year, it was really interesting, but this is going to be off of the Microsoft conference. They kind of distance themselves from that Microsoft conference, which I think is a conscious decision on their part. They want to have enough separation. My guess is they're not going to have any major announcements at Microsoft, even though they have a very strong relationship with them. And so you'll see a few things that you care about, a lot of things you might not care about, but all in all, worth a presentation that's by itself at E3. So EA is another individual division of gaming companies that comes out with an E3 conference. They, however, have a little bit more tout. So games like Battlefront 2, Madden,
yes!
18, FIFA 18, those games are going to lead the show. Everybody knows that Battlefront 2 is out. Everybody knows that it's a big division for them through BioWare, but it's still an EA game. So the big question is are they going to come out with EA BioWare, an EA Battlefront version through Sony's conference, which we know for a fact is a Sony... you know, scheduled property to have specific whatever it is, or are they going to have it on their own? Are they going to also have information about FIFA specifically to Sony, or are they going to have it on their own? And then we also know that they have BioWare has a Dragon Age, which they've mentioned is in production. We don't know where that's at. Obviously, we feel like they're going to show some version of that if they've mentioned it already. They have an unannounced BioWare game that they delayed until 2018, known as Project Dylan, also Destiny Light. That a game that nobody knows about yet's already been delayed until 2018. So we don't even know what it is.
That one's a no-show at this E3.
That one could be Star Wars related too, though. That's the other thing is, I mean, there's a lot of Star Wars games going into production.
But that one doesn't matter what it is. That one, the likelihood of this being talked at this E3 is extremely low.
They got enough other things to talk about with, they're going to want to focus a lot on Battlefront 2, especially with the, with E3 coming, and then if they talk about Battlefront 2 and the fact that it's when Battlefront 2 releases pretty close to The Last Jedi. I mean, those are things that they're going to want to lead with, because that's what's going to hype people up.
That Edmonton group is really heavy into Battlefront 2 right now, and so they're really into getting that thing out and ready to go. And obviously it has a fall directive, so they want to make sure that people can see gameplay specifically, probably, if I had to guess, multiplayer gameplay, because that's the biggest deal of that game. We don't know. Mass Effect had people who have now diverted into other studios, but do you feel like there's going to be DLC for this? I mean, are they going to continue to push this a little bit, or is this a dying breed with Andromeda and they're absolutely done with it?
It's a cost waiting thing. It's, do you feel that Mass Effect Andromeda has enough of a following to be able to make your money back on continuing develop? So if you continue to develop DLC that they're currently working on, could they turn around and sell that DC and make their money back? So stop it now, cut your losses, or make your money back from now on. So
what team is working on it? That's what I want to know, because those teams have been already diverted into the Dylan Project and to EA Battlefront.
Right.
So who actually has worked on it? Or if they have they worked on it so far in advance that this is ready to go and we're just trying to pump out enough money to like justify the reason why we made Andromeda to begin with? Because it feels like Edmonton bailed. They pushed them, or not Montreal. Edmonton bailed. Montreal bailed. They pushed them into the Edmonton team that was dealing with Battlefront, and they just dissolved this team and made them a supportive team as opposed to the lead team. So it's really scary if you're a Mass Effect fan. Or and here's the thing. I'm thinking of people that I know who have led Mass Effect Discords or who are in extreme, Mass Effect fans. Should they be just hitting the eject button with the parachute and like, this is done, we need to go?
No, like the likelihood, and I forgot what I was meant to say earlier, of that Montreal already disbanding is that, unless it's ready to release, they're not developing anything more, unless they had fully let another studio completely develop DLC from scratch. Because if Montreal was developing the DLC, that's done. Either it's fully finished and ready to release, or they canceled it. They already did their cost analysis, and it's done.
Yeah, and I apologize earlier. I spoke and said Edmonton. I meant the Montreal team, because when I was talking about Edmonton, I was thinking in my head of the Battlefront team that was gearing up, and also the team that was doing the new Dylan project. So as far as EA is concerned, those are the major things that they're coming out with. Everybody knows they have Madden, everybody knows they have FIFA. Both of those are big deals. And then anything else they come out with is going to be just like icing on the cake for those guys. I was going to say Microsoft, but I'm going to divert and go to Sony first.
Wait, would you just skip over Microsoft. Damien?
Microsoft. We're going to save Damien for last with Microsoft, because I think it's the most important of all of these conferences. And we're going to talk about Sony. The first game that they should come out with, and this is literally just an absolute effing no-brainer, is Bloodborne 2.
Yeah.
Like, From came up with this game. This is a legit moneymaker. It blew everything up 2 Februarys ago. It led in all game of the year topic for, I would say, 80% of the year until things came out at the tail end that kind of changed people's minds about it. But Bloodborne 2 is definitely, From Software, they definitely have something. They have a new IP coming out. Word is on the street that it's it's definitely, it has robotics and like that sort of thing involved as opposed to Dark Souls. I'm like, what? We're going to have robots? A robot version of Dark Souls? Yep, I'm all for it. So if they can make that and accomplish that, that's a good thing. We know Days Gone was a huge trailer twice, and the rumor was it's because Red Dead Redemption, air quotes, wasn't available at the time. I don't believe that. I believe it, Sony just felt like this was the new IP that they were going to push. So they ran two different promos on this thing. Days Gone is going to be very prominent. It's a Sony first-party studio. They feel like this is going to be the new IP, so they're pushing that. God of War led their E3 conference last year. They're going to be showing more God of War. I pray that Kratos is more in the forefront. They're not just showing the kid, which is what they showed in the last one. It had a very Last of Us feel. And so I hope that I hope that continues. Like, I hope they change the whole premise of God of War and they make it more of a Last of Us feel. That would be kind of awesome. We know that Bungie is umbilically tied to Sony. So you're going to see more Destiny 2. As Destiny 2 fans, what are we looking for? What are we hoping to see? Do you want to see Raid? Do you want to just see more gameplay? Do you want to see guns? What do you want to see as a Destiny 2 fan?
It's hard because it's like, as a fan, you want to see more stuff, but at the same time, you want to experience that stuff and go into a blind. It's such a hard thing. Like the original announcement, you know what? If they did a beta like they did the last time where they gave us a section that we played, if they showed us at E3 a scripted kind of, you know, that fun kind of thing of the area that we're going to explore in the beta, I'd be fine because then we get to experience that ourselves and you're not giving away too much information. Don't show us raids. Raids stay the hell away from it.
Yeah, you can leave that completely out. You don't need to cut a whole trailer. Just like you said, Nate, if it's going to be a beta, show us. I agree with that. I wouldn't want to see anything else except show me what I'm going to be getting and playing in the beta. That's it. Your reveal stream did everything I needed for. Just give me that extra little piece right there. You can be short, sweet, hand it over to the next person on Sony stage, and you can go about your business.
Do you get a beta release date?
Yeah.
Give us a beta. Give us the beta's release date. You know, obviously they're going to give the Sony release date, and then later it'll be announced later that day the Xbox release. You know, Xbox date, but it won't be obviously not going to show up on the Sony thing. We might see a PC release date, but that would be it. They're going to sidestep.
Considering the release date of Destiny, when do you think you're going to see the beta testing of whatever that we see?
I think that you're going to see the beta announced that it's going to launch for PlayStation players right after the conference, right there. I think it's going to be announced that day that the conference will go live. I think that it'll be 2 weeks later that Xbox and PC players get it.
That's a hell of a extra.
That's a crazy bump. Like 2 days, can buy. 2 weeks, good God.
They got the PlayStation got alpha exclusive alpha, which was 2 weeks, I believe.
If I was a betting man, I would say the first week of August, and I would say that everybody gets to play on that. You get a 2 day early release on PlayStation versus Xbox, and then everybody would get an opportunity to play that first or second week of August. Just you're basically place testing servers. It has nothing to do with the game itself. You're just trying to figure out, you know, are there any bugs? Is there anything that we can fix quick?
I thought one of the heads at Bungie actually answered somebody's question on Twitter, kind of clarifying a time window for the beta release, and it was like maybe early July, late June, but I don't remember the exact date. I have to look it up.
That would be awesome if that was the case. We saw the trailer for Spider-Man last year. It was just a cinematic trailer, although it was in engine. If the boys over in the former Xbox camp can make this game as plentiful as they did a skateboarding game, this game is going to be off the rails. So how do you feel about a Spider-Man game in which you can play as Spider-Man and be jumping, crawling wall to wall. The last time we saw a legitimate game was early on in the PlayStation 3 process.
Spider-Man 2, right?
So, yeah. Spider-Man 2 was even earlier than that. That was PS2. I was going to PS3 for basis of the game. But Sunset Overdrive is the game that I'm speaking of, in which it was just a game that was just constantly move. Same gaming developers who are now in the midst of making Spider-Man. And if the trailers, which they said were in-game, in-action, meaning like you can play those versions, that version of Spider-Man happens, I can't even imagine what the game's going to look like.
Yeah, knowing the developer and being a huge fan of the game that they produced for Xbox, again, this is another one of those titles that comes out that makes me really want a PlayStation. They make good games, and this is a title that just knowing the developer, knowing what they did with that title, and then you throw Spider-Man's abilities into that mix, man, like, you better have a good refresh rate on your TV is all I'm saying, or your monitor, because you're going to want to catch every single movement.
Yeah, see, I tried Sunset Overdrive, and the constant movement of it was nuts. Like, I want to be able to every once in a while take a break if I'm playing a game. Not to get up, but at least take a breather. And that game did not allow for breathers many times at all. So I don't know if that's something from a gameplay perspective appeals to me. But I do think that if you're going to be making a Spider-Man game, you do need to have something that is that level of action, because he is a constantly moving, swinging. If he doesn't spin up another web, he's going to fall to the ground type stuff, where you have to constantly be moving between buildings. And I like that. I like that they did it. If they do it, they do it that way.
Yeah, Insomniac, which, by the way, is the developer that we're speaking of. Insomniac has a way of, in Sunset Overdrive, making you feel like the ground is the devil, and so you can't hit that. And so if that's the way Spider-Man's played, it's web to web, character to character, if we're hitting the ground for a short period of time, we're back up in the air again, that would actually make the game more action-packed, and so I would be all in for Spider-Man as well. Another game that we just talked about that was EA, but is also, and we're going to be talking about this quite a bit, Sony, a lot of Sony third-party games are other developers, but console exclusive for particular parts. Again, Battlefront 2, Call of Duty World War 2, which again has specific DLC, a game that's going to be held by Ubisoft, Far Cry 5. A major game that like now is, it feels like so far away. And the last two are going to be the big bangs. So like, I feel like they're either going to lead with this or they're going to end with this. One of them is The Last of Us 2. And they did that at the Sony conference, and it was like beyond bananas. We're talking about something where people were like Joel and Ellie are just iconic in the PlayStation world. I bought my PlayStation 4 because of The Last of Us. Like, that was the reason why I bought it. Mm-hmm. And again, I've stated it on this podcast more than one time, no regrets. I would buy it for this game alone. So the fact that they're coming out with a sequel, so pumped up, so excited. If you saw Uncharted, that entire development team has moved over to The Last of Us 2, aside from the folks that finished up The Lost Legacy, which we'll be talking about in just a second. But to see Ellie in her teens and Joel as the older version of Joel, older version. Now we're talking like 60s Joel, where she's taking care of him as opposed to he taking care of her. I think, I can't even imagine what it is. I know this is a year and a half away. This is a 2019, late 2019 title, but give me some more. Like, I want to see some more.
Mm-hmm.
And then we talked about Lost Legacy for Uncharted 4. We call it, it's called a DLC, but in reality, it's a standalone title. Female leads for the entire thing, which I think is fantastic. And something that if you purchase the original Uncharted with all of the accoutrement, it's all together. And if not, it is a separated title. All right, Damien, let's talk about Microsoft. And listen, Project Scorpio has got to be the lead ticket.
Scorpio, they need to lead in with Scorpio, and they need to end with Scorpio. They need to really have, like, they need to come into it That needs to be like, you know, drop the bomb. Then let's show you what else is coming along into our
$400 bomb. The big that $400.
Okay, minimum. $400. There's going to be the $400. There's going to be the $400 entry. You know that it's
gonna, and then the accessories.
There'll be other packages. You'll get the one that has a larger hard drive and all this stuff. But the thing is unless it, I mean, you don't need. Those are all things that some people are thinking, oh, I need the one with the larger hard drive. Guess what? You don't. Go to Costco and you can get yourself like 4 terabytes for like $110, something like that.
I have a 4 terabyte right now that I haven't even remotely touched.
Yeah, so I mean, it's like, you know, you get your entry level unit that will get you everything you need and just get yourself an external hard drive.
Yeah, the only time you don't need an external hard drive is if you're buying a device that doesn't have the ability to access an external hard drive. That's it. That's where you buy the internal memory, but everything else you can put cheap external on there.
Oh yeah. Yeah. So that's one thing with the Scorpio. You know that there's going to be the different priced units. There'll be different bundle packages. The question now is with that Scorpio, because we know that there's going to be some form of an announcement for a various elite style controller.
Different from what you currently own, too. Like, yeah. It's not going to be the same.
Yeah, Elite. It's either going to be called Elite 2.0, and it's just going, like, there's different, we've seen prototype things that have talked about whether they're removable, changeable triggers, things like that. We do, but what we do know is that there will be some form of a Xbox Elite design lab.
I hope so, because, like, people who bought the original Xbox Elite got effed. Because they lock up, and then you can't do anything about them, and then you have to reach out to Microsoft in order to fix these things, and they're jammed. And that includes the being able to move the sticks and moving those in and out and changing the sizes of them. I have plenty of friends who have been locked out of their Xbox Elite controller and have to send it to Microsoft in order to get fixed.
My RB and LB buttons failed on mine, just like they did on Brandon's. And like I've seen that so many scenarios. So many people have had those buttons go out on. Apparently, that is an extremely common thing. I'm actually sad Microsoft didn't recall, considering the number of people I've heard have that issue. But to me, I'm not super excited about a newer Elite controller because as Chris was saying previously, I want the games. Like, you need to come out with exclusive games, because right now your next best competition is just piling them on right now, and if you're quiet about it, it's telling.
That's the thing, is they're not going to be quiet about it. We know that there's at least 3 new studios that are going to be announced projects. We don't know the titles. There's studios that are coming out now, and they're hinting. They're like, oh, we used to work for PlayStation, and now we're going to announce that we're doing a AAA title for a AAA publisher. But you know, like, we left PlayStation, we got a new name. Where are you gonna go? You're not going to Nintendo.
Yeah.
The rise and fall of Xbox lies on their games. So because they're gonna hammer home this Scorpio thing for about 15 or 20 minutes of their hour long, and then they're going to hammer it home again for the last 5 minutes. So in between that period of time, you have roughly about 40 minutes to talk about games or whatever it is. Periphery, we hit figures another 5 to 10 minutes, so now we're talking about a half an hour of games.
Yeah.
What do you have that I care about?
State of Decay 2, which is a multiplayer.
Yes.
The first experience was so just so different from anything we experienced. Death meant something. You played a character. You played all the characters. They created relationships with each other. They had to survive, you know. And then if a character died, that affected the livelihood of other groups and stuff like that. You had so much other inner dialogue stuff going on with different things, and you played as them. It made you feel for the whole group, not just one character. And I'm very curious how the studio is going to take that ability to feel for your characters and pull it into a multiplayer experience. And if you're able to do it and keep that feels and then let me play with my friends, oh my God. Like, that is a game that I will play a lot of. Like,
all right, 2 things about State of Decay 2. One, you on purpose mentioned that right away because you knew it was going to hit me right away. Because if you mentioned the other four games, you knew I was going to shit on them. Second of all, that game was a multiplayer game that was online all the time. That was the biggest complaint. They mentioned they're going to work on that as opposed to being online constantly and kind of being when you're in game versus like as the game, you mm-hmm. know, kind of works around you, which would help people in State of Decay because people lost State of Decay based on the fact that it was like, listen, I've been away for 2 days. All of a sudden, half my team is gone. I don't have the time to spend 25 more hours this week into State of Decay. And also, can I join up with other players? Because that's the biggest flipping thing about State of Decay. You were playing solo in that game. I want to play a zombie apocalypse with five other people. If I'm going to permadie, let me permadie with three other players who have got my back mm-hmm. while I'm doing
exactly.
it. Not, you know, not NPCs that have my back. I want real people to have my back so that if I'm not in game and you've got my back while I'm in game, I know I'm safe. So Microsoft has State of Decay 2, especially after they came out with the original and then they did like the Redux version and mm-hmm. like came up with HD version and stuff like that. People care about this game. People are excited about a real zombie game. This to me is a third person. This is the Division version of a zombie game where people actually care about it. And it really is building and it isn't just like just shoot the shit out of a bunch of zombies. It's like, how do I protect my fort? Mm-hmm. How do I protect my people? How do I care about my group? This is The Walking Dead in a video game.
Exactly.
This is what The Walking Dead should be in a video game.
Yeah, and I couldn't have said it better. And this was a small studio too. This is another tale of a smaller studio. I mean, granted, they got beefed up for making this one. And originally, like, if you followed them on social media or anything like that, when they came out with the first one, the one of the top things was people asking for multiplayer. And they said, you know, we would love to do it with this. They even tried it with the first one, and they just weren't able to figure it. They weren't able to do it. And that's why, you know, you got this one coming out, and it's looking to answer all the questions and all the, you know, all the things that the fans wanted.
I remember being online last year when Greg Miller was tweeting at Undead Labs, and it was like, hey, have you heard about State of Decay 2? And they're like, we don't even know what you're talking about. We have nothing coming out right now. And then all of a sudden, Undead Labs hits with like, yeah, State of Decay 2. And you know what the best part of State of Decay 2 is Undead Labs has gone literally radio silent, aside from screenshots. They show screenshots, which they did with State of Decay. Mm-hmm. Like, here's what a shooting scout looks like. This is what this looks like. This is what it looks like. We're not going to shoot any gameplay, and we're going to keep our mouths flipping shut until we show you at the biggest event possible, and they're going to show it at E3, and this is going to be one of those 4K showcases for the Scorpio.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, and I am excited beyond, like, belief for it. Another one that, you know, if it's Xbox, you know they're going to showcase it because it's an easy grab at graphics and
Forza.
But yeah. It is a good game. They're going to definitely show Forza. Forza will be there. It's going to be one of the things that they lead in to showcase graphics because just like sports games and things like that, it's something that it's an easy thing to show graphics on.
And if you're Microsoft, too, you're fighting against Need for Speed, which is coming out tomorrow. If you're going to see a video, like, we're going to be late on this, but, like, Need for Speed has a video coming out tomorrow on Friday, the 2nd, about what their game is about. So, Force is the leader in the clubhouse. Mm-hmm. They're in motorsports as well as their off-branch are the two biggest games in racing. It used to be Need for Speed. And it used to be other games that Sony cared about, but they don't anymore. And so they're the leader in the clubhouse as far as Microsoft is concerned. You'll see just whatever they can max out on. Because remember, Forza maxed out on an original Xbox One that kicked it into the Scorpio and was running at 60, only at, what was it, 3/4 of whatever the capacity of the gaming system could do. So you know this thing can kick an overdrive with whatever it is that they have going on over there. So Forza is going to be a major player as far as graphics are concerned.
Yeah. And then next up, you're definitely going to see, and this is something that's been tweeted about, is Sea of Thieves is going to have a huge presence at this E3. One of the main things with this is that Joe Neat already tweeted out that the game build for E3 is extremely huge. Like, just the in-depth, what they're going to have players be able to do and everything. And under NDA, so I can't say what I've been seeing going on in the testing of it, but...
I'm not under NDA because I stopped playing. So, this is what I have to say about Sea of Thieves. They need to show me why I want to play. And when I say me, I mean the person who stopped playing, who hasn't done any of the testing. At E3, gets a glimpse of 4 minutes of game trailer and tell me why I want to play this. Tell me if there's story. Tell me if there's no story. Tell me the reason why there's no story, if there is no story. Tell me why it is that I have to play it, if there is no story. You've got to give me everything in a 4 minute trailer, and it can't be, what do we do? I need to know why. I need to know why, because right now, it seems like a whole lot of fun to play this game, but if I want to play this game, I'll play Destiny. And I'll play Destiny 2, and I will completely forget about this game. And if this is just an online only, and you make your own story, I can make my own story with a guardian that I have coming back from year one.
Nah, there's a lot more to it than that. And I mean, and I can say that there's a lot more. There's going to be, even in one of the behind the scenes stories, talking about the campaign and live campaigns and they're going to put into the game different stories that are going to be timed events, like holiday events and other things that they're going to put in that are going to have the players doing different things that they wouldn't do on the norm, that will be story driven and things like that. That will give them, they'll earn items that will show that they did them, and those will change each year. They won't be the same thing repeatable.
Yeah, for me, I said between both Damien and Chris here. Sorry, I have the hiccups, guys, but I said between you guys that it's a game that I definitely could see myself playing, to see myself enjoying it with friends, and don't really need a whole bunch more. But I'm also involved with guys like y'all that have a lot of insight to the game, been able to access alpha testing and being able to play it with the majority of the community hasn't. So leaning onto Chris's side of it, they need to be able to communicate to people who have just seen this game in passing on why they need to play this game, because just selling this game to the alpha testers and the ones that are previously excited about it is not going to be enough. And so they need to make that crossover into all those other fans and get them excited about the game. And I really think that they will be able to do it, because the backbone of this game, I think, is going to be strong, fun, and unique. So I'm excited to see that one come around. But like anything else into the game side? So just one of mine in there, like I have an outside theory on there that Microsoft said their studios working on games. I really hope that the game that's been quiet about for the last 4 years, Cyberpunk 2077 from CD Projekt Red, shows up as a Microsoft exclusive, that it comes out of nowhere as the game that, CD Projekt Red's overseas, they're not involved in our media cycles as much. They can just have kept this under wraps for so long, and it's time. Come out, boom. Microsoft exclusive, it's a great one for that.
That'd be cool. Yeah.
It would be really cool, except CD Projekt Red knows that PlayStation has at least a jump on 20 grand on the next Xbox owners, so they would not want to lose money.
No, that's where Microsoft makes up the difference. That when you sign your exclusivity deal, you make up that difference by saying, this is the number you think you're going to lose on it. This exclusivity deal pays you that much to get it on our side. And so that's where all those numbers get made up, to make sure that you make your money on it. And plus, it's CD Projekt Red. Like if they have so much clout in the community that right now they can do no wrong. So prove to me you could do wrong before I believe it, because I haven't seen it yet.
Phil doesn't pay for exclusives. He just doesn't.
Yet.
I say yet. That's 2 years. 2 years of I don't pay for exclusives. So let's hope that he does. We know that Ori and the Blind Forest is due for a sequel. So there's a chance that comes out, or at least we get some information about that. Let's talk about the elephant in the room. How about Crackdown 3? because, I mean, listen, I'd say 2 years ago, it was three E3s ago, did we see Crackdown 3. And it was like, oh, sweet, there's Crackdown 3, and it's in the cloud, and look at all those buildings that are dissolving in the cloud, and then, shh, quiet. Wait, 2 years ago? 2 years ago? 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And then last year, it was like, oh, hey, we're Crackdown 3, we're not going to say anything this year, but, like, keep an eye out for us. And then they went quiet again, and you haven't heard from them again, which is awesome, because I'd rather not hear from you than hear from you, because I'd rather not be, you know, any... Kojima product that is out right now that we hear way too much about shit that's not even real in the vicinity of being out. So Crackdown 3 quieted up. I would assume that they'd be this is a like the reason why it got farther out is because of Scorpio. So this is a 4K game running at, I would guess, 60 frames, and with the disposable environment to make it like just pop on screen. This is it. Microsoft showcasing what they do best in a third party developer who's coming out with a game for them, which would be Crackdown.
Yeah, I mean that would make sense. And Crackdown's an interesting series for me because Crackdown 1, I'm gonna admit, I bought it the same reason everybody else did. Crackdown 1, I bought it for the Halo 3 beta. Because you bought it and you got it, and then it grew on me. Like I was like, oh, Halo 3 beta, I'm gonna buy this game, and then the game grew on me, and then Crackdown 2 came out, I'm like, oh, you can play co-op. So I got it, and I enjoyed that one. And then this one, the destructive ability, you know, all that stuff, it does really speak to me and kind of some of the type of games that I enjoy to play. Now, I just hope that the multiplayer versus and stuff like that don't feel like it's something that's tacked on. Crackdown 2, the multiplayer versus felt like it was tacked on. It just felt like an afterthought. I'm hoping that with this one, with that ability, I'm going to want to play a multiplayer version where I'm going against other players. I want to feel like it was thought about from the beginning through to the end. And so that's my main hope with that one.
Side things that we probably are going to see, Ubisoft is going to definitely talk about Assassin's Creed. It's an Xbox exclusive. My guess is they're going to show it at their conference, and they're going to show just minor bits at the Xbox conference. Cappy Games hasn't talked about Below in 2 years. And so this is another in the likeness of Inside and some other games as far as an indie game that has this puzzle game. And so perhaps this is the moment to show it. Again, Cuphead... I mean, Jesus, are we going to show it for the third straight E3? Like, at this point now, we're to The Division, which, like, just stop. Just either come out with a flipping game or don't come out with the game. But don't make a game that's against bosses only. People bitch because there's no levels. So then you're like, oh, wait, well, we're going to go back to the drawing board and create levels. And now we're back to the third E3. So have you created levels and still the same boss matches? What are we doing? Please just show us. And let us be able to play. Cuphead's a big game too,
and it's a side scroller too. What's your development cycle on this thing? Come on, let's put some effort.
Yep.
Now, the other thing that I think that we're gonna see, because we know that there's unannounced titles. This isn't confirmed. This would be considered a rumor, but I believe that we are going to see one of two Fable. Games. And I'm not talking about the card game, the Fable card game that we know is in development by former staff of Lionhead, but I'm talking about a large open world Witcher 3 style dark story RPG or action RPG. I do think that we will see something along the lines of that being announced.
Damien, what do you feel about Half-Life?
They can't count to three. So until you can count to three, then prove to me you can count to three. Yeah. Because there's Half-Life 1 and 2, and it's Portal 1 and 2. Until you can count.
I think Xbox has a real play here. If you can get in with Valve, I think it's a play. I think they need a play. Because I think Sony, to me, has the third-party developers. They have the console that's in the leader in the clubhouse, and Xbox needs to have more than just, I have two or three games, and I have the Scorpio. What am I going to do? If they get in bed with Valve, bingo.
Yeah.
You're all in. You have your PC players, because it's Xbox Anywhere. You have your console players, because they're like, oh shit, I can get Half-Life? I'm in. And everybody's super, super excited. They need that go-to app that goes with the Scorpio. And to me, that's...
The other thing with teaming with Valve is that Valve, you know, they run Steam. And Xbox, you know, Microsoft has stated time and time again that, you know, they are trying to move and blend. Move away from the console, per se, and move towards PC. Maybe make it to where, yes, you can buy an Xbox, but it is basically essentially a Steam box. It is essentially a piece, gaming PC with a controller peripheral. The problem, though, is that they've had a lot of problems with the Windows Store. And, you know, the other thing is teaming up with something like Valve. Another thing that they could be doing is teaming up, say, hey, you know, we'd like you to look at helping us out with our storefront, and we can put, you know, we'd like something similar to Steam with an Xbox skin on it. I mean, it's not unheard of considering the fact that Microsoft is the one that's behind Siri for Apple. Everything that powers Siri is Bing. So, and in part of that partnership, they actually were able to get code, and that's how they created Cortana. So, I mean, there's a lot of things going around, a lot of things going around up here in Washington that could be quite interesting. And I think that the E3 showing for Xbox is going to really knock it out of the water.
Yeah, you give me some Valve stuff, and you prove to me Gabe can count to three. I'm an excited son of a gun, because everything they've done has been in all time favorites list for me. So let's do it. But give me a Portal 3 too while you're at it. Just throw that in there.
Another gaming console that needs to prove something this year would be Nintendo. We just heard earlier today that Nintendo does not plan launching their online gaming service until 2018 at the price of $30 for an entire year, which is not $20 probably. It's not a bad price, $20, and $3.99 for what, like a month, and then it was like, was it $6.99 for 3 months, and then they ran it up to $20. But it wasn't every case. It wasn't expensive. It was all based upon your phone. But Nintendo, it for sure is more direct, I think, right now, and is very like on point with whatever the presentation is that they're going to show. They've spoken about a Mario Odyssey. That's a given. They're going to show Mario Odyssey. Last year was Zelda. This year is Mario Odyssey. You'll get a chance to see what that hat's all about. You get a chance to see what an open world Mario looks like. A version of an N64 game. And so everybody's going to have things to say about that. We also know that Kirby Anniversary Games is going to be out. They're really hell-bent on promoting the Kirby games, which I'm agreeing upon, based upon the fact that it was a major game, or the toys to life. Like, Kirby was one of those major factors for them. So I think that's online. Skyrim, if you're going to show it in your video, like, you got to come out with the game. So it's going to put a lot of pressure on Bethesda to be like, okay, bro, like, this is a popular handheld now. Like, you really need to come out with the game. If you're going to show it, don't just, you know, tease it. You've got to actually show it. Mario and the Rabbids series has been promoted more than one time online currently. So everybody knows this game's coming out. It's just a matter of when it's coming out. Smash for Switch. That's the ticket. I'm really excited about this part. So in my world, Smash for Switch does not come out at all this year. They don't try to confuse people with ARMS and Smash. They go after whatever they feel is the brawler market, and right now they're trying to produce ARMS, and they can put Smash in their back pocket. Smash is, we need to hit the eject button and hit the in order to be able to be saved. We need to be able to pop open our emergency pack and float to the next big main title. So they could come out with Smash in the spring. They can come out with the Smash in the summer next year. Whenever they feel like it, they can pull that button and hit the eject button and parachute to the next big major title. What are your guys' thoughts?
I'm pulling back a little on my previous projection that Nintendo is going to be owned by Xbox in 2 years. Because it looks like they're going to have some long development cycles, and a lot of these things are going to be are strong titles that are going to have large fan acquisition. And yeah, this I'm starting to see more staying power with Nintendo, because before, when Breath of the Wild was the only thing holding it and I just didn't see the future for them, I'm starting to see a little more future with them. But they need to extend past this. They need to extend games past the end of 2017.
They need to make an ability for you to talk with people other than having to look for it on your phone. That, like, I've been... The gameplay for a mobile service, I guess, and being able to play and have story games that you can play and stuff like that, I get that. But being one of those people who really enjoy playing with other players and everything, yes, you can do that, but then to have to have my phone near me to be able to do that, it's like that feels like it's such a step back in time. Like, I feel like I did this on dial up when I had dial up internet, and like I feel like I had a different, like I had a phone then. Like I was using my mom's cell phone. It was after 9 o'clock at night. Okay, I'll call my cousin and talk to him on the phone while I'm playing, you know, Alien versus Predator.
Yeah, this was something we said a while back. Switch feels like it was rushed to be released. It constantly feels that way with the delay for their live feature, their delay for their voice chat. Doesn't look like they're ever going to get any streaming apps, Netflix, Hulu, Amazon Prime. Doesn't look like it's ever going to come there. This is a half-released product that was rushed out to release when Breath of the Wild released, because if not, you're going to release a game that Nintendo internally probably looked as, this is a 10 for us. And one of the big ways we're going to sell the Switch is releasing it simultaneously and seen as a Breath of the Wild bot. And putting those two things together worked for them for their release. But you can start seeing now a lot of the ancillary apps not coming to fruition.
Yeah, for sure. And as far as the Legend of Zelda DLC, what do you feel like? Do you think that we're going to see anything? Like, are we going to get a little taste? Are they going to keep it quiet?
Oh yeah, I'd be surprised if they didn't show a little bit of the story side, like the second part of the DLC. I would be surprised if they didn't show a little bit of the story you're going to be getting, because everything they released about the first DLC pack of it, of the two pack, is basically you could do in screenshots, because it's not much in terms of gameplay additions, so you can do that very easily. But I would more like to see a video trailer for the story, and I would be surprised if they didn't have a video trailer for the story.
And finally, for Xbox fans, you've been begging, like as much as we've been begging for a legit Mario game for Metroid, like a Switch version of Metroid. What are the thoughts of it actually being something that they announce, or do you think this is a little bit farther in the future?
Man, if they announce a Switch version of Metroid, like Metroid Prime or anything like that, that's another thing. That's like, man, there's certain titles that you get enough of those out there, I'm going to eventually bite and buy one. And if you announce Metroid, I'm going to have to say I'm going to be all in, and I'm just going to have to dodge some brooms and other things flying my direction.
So I think it's time for us to head into This Week in Geek.
Hey, Doc, we better back up. We don't have enough road to get up to 88.
Roads? Where we're going, we don't need roads.
All right, first up in This Week in Geek, June 1st, 1999. It's going to be a hiccup-riddled This Week in Geek. Sean Fanning and Sean Parker released the file-sharing service Napster. The service provides a simple way for users to copy and distribute MP3 music files. It becomes an instant hit, especially among college students. Just over 6 months later, though, on December 7th, 1999, the RIA recording industry files a lawsuit against the service alleging mass copyright infringement. Eventually, this lawsuit would force the shutdown of the company on September 3rd, 2002, about 3 years later, but not before the popularity of download digital music is firmly entrenched in generations of internet users, extending even to video and more stuff. Hiccup over. Go.
Listen. First off, I want to know which one of those Sean's is represented in the movie The Italian Job, because he went by the nickname Napster.
Oh, nice. Yeah. No, it's I think it's the third guy. I think he played. He plays the third guy.
Yeah, okay, that's yeah. Right. Okay. All right.
I think that's how it goes, but I'll have to rewatch that. But yes, he was referencing, I think, Sean Parker in it, but didn't consider both of them.
Yeah, because he was asleep and he got it stolen while he was asleep. Hence, then he got the nickname Napster. Yeah. Okay.
Gotcha. Yeah.
Okay.
May 31st, 1991, Sega releases the video game Zero Wing and the Sega Mega Drive system in Europe. The game was never released in North America and was relatively unknown until years later when the poorly translated opening scene was popularized by the internet. The most famous mistranslation is phrase, "All your base are belong to us," which has become very popular internet meme.
Oh man, that used to go. That was back around like the same thing, same time as the little video that they put out, Lobster Magnet.
All your base are belong.
Yeah,
to us.
That thing was everywhere, and I was like, "Where does that come from?" It had better be something popular, and sure enough, no, it was something very unpopular. Where that meme came from?
We're talking about my EverQuest days here. That's nuts. I was still in high school, I think.
You had hair in the top of your head probably too.
Oh, I did. I know. I didn't have facial hair. All right. So next up, May 28th, 1987. I could try to tag this to a Friday the 13th, but I won't. CompuServe releases the graphics interchange format, GIF. Standard as a new computer graphics file format. Due to color...
GIF.
That's right. You're right. GIF.
Did the universe just that's change that pronunciation just last
yeah,
week?
Yeah. Yeah.
No,
it's peanut
the guy
butter.
Came out and said it was GIF.
Yeah, he did.
Everybody's been
but
correcting.
GIF is peanut butter.
Everybody's been correcting. Myself, it's GIF. It's GIF. And he comes out, no, it's GIF. And everybody's like, but what do you... Oh, yeah, you created. Son of...
Okay. So, my bad. GIF... I like that peanut butter. Due to color limitations, the GIF format is unsuitable for reproducing color photographs, but is well suited for more simple images such as graphics or logos with solid areas of color.
All right. Now that we're done with this long episode, we noticed Hype Train was filled with just E3 projections. There wasn't actually much on trailers and hype stuff about, so we'll just move anything that we talk about into next week's episode on the few little things there. And signing off, you can find me, Caucasian Saint, CaucasianSaint on Twitter, minus the hiccup for gas restrictions. Damien, where can we find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Mr. Damien Nash, all one word. You can find me, Man in the Late Night, Geekologist Radio Twitter. So that would be at Geekologist Radio minus the T for character restrictions. You can email us at geekologist@ninjapancake.com. And you can find us on the web at geekologistradio.com, queuedupmedia.com. And where can we find you, Chris?
You can find me at Two Wolves, TWOWOLVZZ. All the aforementioned by Mr. Damien Nash, Geekologist, Ninja Pancake, Twitter, Facebook.
And you're writing also, aren't you?
I am writing. I'm currently writing at gameskinny.com, helping out with those guys, learning a lot, by the way, what it's like to write in games media, and super pumped up to be a part of their crew. So if you have an opportunity to head over to that site, definitely interesting information. And so for Geekologist Radio, and the rest of the crew, minus Fouts, we are out.
Man, I was holding in those hiccups at the end. Jeez, Elise. I was like...